This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
People vote for what people want, but the majority of life on Earth, the animals and the plants, they don't get a voice at all, really. I'm Alex Smith, and I've often thought each member of Parliament or Congress should also represent a species, and if that creature becomes extinct, the elected member loses their seat, shall we say. Well, let's talk with broadcaster and ecologist Hugh Warwick. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, am I, Hugh?
Alex, yes, and what an absolutely brilliant idea. I think we should be tying our elected representatives to biodiversity. Absolutely brilliant idea.
Well, perhaps we'll have that kind of Parliament of the Animals at some point, and I gather you've been chosen to represent the European hedgehog.
I've been working with the Western European hedgehog as an ecologist now for over 20 years, been studying them, been finding out how much of an impact they have when they're in places they shouldn't be, finding out how well they tolerate being looked after, because they are cared for a great deal by people in the UK, and seeing really why their numbers are declining so much across the country, despite it being regularly voted the most popular animal in the United Kingdom.
And you've written a book called A Prickly Affair in Europe, and here in North America it's The Hedgehog's Dilemma. So I'm going to ask you the obvious, what is The Hedgehog's Dilemma?
I tell you what it is. It's my favorite title. Unfortunately, the publishers in the UK had other thoughts on that matter and went for A Prickly Affair. The Hedgehog's Dilemma actually comes from the work of the German philosopher Schopenhauer. And it's a simple idea that you've got two hedgehogs want to be close to each other, and as they start getting really close to each other, they start to hurt each other because they're prickles. So they move further away, and then they start getting lonely. So they try and get close to each other again. And I'd read through about the idea of the hedgehog's dilemma, and then it dawned on me that we, as a species, humanity, is in a sort of hedgehog's dilemma with the natural world. We want to be close to the natural world, or many of us do, but if we all go off and get close to the natural world, we are going to destroy it. We will trample it. We will abuse it. But as we extract ourselves from the natural world, it, almost as in the opposite reaction, we remove ourselves from it. We become lonely and bereft. And there's been some very good research done showing direct physiological consequences of lack of appreciation and experience within the natural world. It's something we are designed to need.
Yes, we're hardwired for a lot of those sounds and smells and sights that we just don't get in our apartments or cities. Most of my North American listeners have never seen a live hedgehog because they don't live here on this continent. They might confuse them with porcupines, but those are different. So where do hedgehogs live?
Well, hedgehogs live most places apart from the Americas and Australia. Oh, and Antarctica, obviously. They're an old world, to use a sort of technical term, an old world species. The western reach of the hedgehog would be the west coast of Ireland, and they go all the way across to the east coast of China. And they are a very, very, and all the way down to the bottom of South Africa as well. So there are hedgehogs all over the place. We have the specific Western European hedgehog, but there are desert hedgehogs. There are ones that used to living in sort of wetter foresty areas. There are hedgehogs filling many niches. But one of the things I think is so special about the hedgehog is they are remarkably unchanged from the very first hedgehogs. And the very first hedgehogs came along in around 70 million years ago. And the mother hedgehog arriving from sort of Southeast Asia, I think they think. And that 70 million years ago is really significant because dinosaurs were around until 65 million years ago. And I had this lovely image of sort of proto-hedgehogs nipping at the heels of departing dinosaurs. But, I mean, they didn't look like our hedgehogs now. They probably didn't have spines. I mean, the spines on a hedgehog are just a wonderful adaptation. It's basically hair, which is adapted to become stiffer and stiffer and stiffer until they become a fine defense mechanism. I mean, the same style of defense mechanism as in a porcupine, But it's that great thing of convergent evolution. It's just because two things have found the same solution to a problem doesn't mean they're necessarily related. There are echidnas in Papua New Guinea and Australia, which are covered in spines. There are tenrex in Madagascar. And obviously, you've got porcupines in Africa and the Americas. But they are all different animals to the hedgehog.
And the humble cactus, of course. Well, I've held a small hedgehog, thanks to Jimmy Hofstadter in the fifth grade, he had one as a pet. Do they make good pets?
Well, this is a question which has been asked a lot in the UK of late, because every now and then you'll find a hedgehog breeder, a pet hedgehog breeder, will start finding some cute photographs, and they'll go out to the press, and everyone will see them, and the press will go, this is the next must-have fad pet. Now, this happened in America in the 1990s, early 1990s, about 1991, and an exotic pet dealer was in Nigeria and found these cute little hedgehogs. Now, they're different to our European hedgehogs. They're Latin names. They're a Telerix frontalis and a Telerix albiventris. They're smaller than the European hedgehogs. They've got slightly bigger, they've got bigger ears. They are almost like sort of spiny gerbils, and they do seem to make very good pets. If you are happy with the idea of having a wild animal as a pet. Now personally, I find that too much to bear. But in the UK, my concern is that people would start getting excited and then get confused with our resident hedgehogs, which don't make good pets. And one of the simple things this comes down to is the efficiency of their kidneys. Now, I'm going to move into a slightly sort of physiological moment here. Desert hedgehogs have to be very, very careful with their water. They absorb all the water from their guts, so their feces are very dry and fairly unsmelly. European hedgehogs live in a very wet environment on the whole and are fairly profligate with their use of water, so they've got softer, smellier feces. So that's just one very good reason why the European hedgehog is not a good pet.
And you have written in your blog about a hedgehog Olympics in Denver, Colorado. Can you tell us about that?
It was something I actually thought was a joke. I really did think this was a joke. I'd been invited to the Rocky Mountain Hedgehog Show, run by the Hedgehog Welfare Society and the International Hedgehog Association, who the remnants of the hedgehog pet keeping fad that swept through America and then, like all pet keeping fads, dies a death. And there are still people very dedicated to their little hedgehogs, and they care for them an awful lot. So there was the show, which is like a sort of dog show. You've seen the film Best in Breed, or Best in Show.
Mm-hmm.
The guys who did Spinal Tap, they did a pastiche on dog shows. It's sort of like that, but with hedgehogs. You know, the cutest hedgehog wins. After quite some time. And after I'd done my talk and there'd been the hedgehog show, they said, well, you'll be staying for the International Hedgehog Olympic Games. Now, I'm prone to saying things which are lies because they're jokes. You know, it's a form of humor. And I was sort of waiting for the punchline. He didn't really think that was true, did he? But it was. And in fact, the International Olympic Committee has written to the International Hedgehog Olympic Games to ask that they ensure nobody thinks there's any endorsement from the human Olympics. And anyway, it's very different.
Please, I have to interrupt. You must be very careful what you say, because the Canadian police want to censor everything about the Olympics. They just held a visiting journalist coming in because she might say something anti-Olympic.
What's going on with the Olympics?
Oh, well, we've got the Winter Olympics, and they've got $1 billion in police money to spend, and we don't seem to have any terrorists, so they're looking for...
Well, have we got this is going to be great. You have the Hedgehog Winter Olympics, then, and we can be, I don't know, I'm rolling hedgehogs down the ski slopes and seeing how fast you can get them up to.
We've got these huge icy luge things. They go a million miles a minute.
They'd love it. Well, actually, they'll probably use hedgehog skins on the original luge. In fact, I'm sure this will find this to be true. The very first people doing the luge, they used hedgehog spines on the bottom of their shoes to get traction to run. Is that true?
No. Okay. So why do the folks in Britain go to such great lengths to get hedgehogs into their gardens?
Hedgehogs, especially our hedgehogs in the UK, they eat a lot of garden pests, slugs and snails and other beasties, other invertebrates. I mean, they're insectivores is what their official title is in their terms of their how they are defined through taxonomy, but they don't just eat insects, so they're eating other invertebrates too. And they're fantastic at sort of sweeping up some of the more damaging mollusks that are out there. But also they are, and this is something I bang on a great deal about in the book, they are the one single bit of wildlife that ordinary people can have a chance to getting really close to. I mean, they can feed birds, they can throw bread at ducks in the park and things, and they can get it quite close to them. I mean, you can even eventually get a robin feeding from your hands. But the hedgehog is the one animal, because of its defense mechanism, which isn't to run away, which isn't to attack, but which is to stay still and roll up into a ball. This allows you to get very close. And once you've become attuned to the rhythm of the hedgehog, and you are calm, and you approach the hedgehog gently, and you get the hedgehog to relax in your company, you get a chance of getting nose to nose with a genuinely wild animal, something you cannot do with any other wild animal. And I think that's really important, because so going back to the idea of how we're hardwired to need contact with the natural world, I think we can almost short circuit that by getting a really quick glimpse of genuine wildness in the eyes of a true wild animal.
Yes, this is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. We're talking with British broadcaster and ecologist Hugh Warwick. Hugh, some claim that hedgehogs have become a pest in the Scottish Islands or in New Zealand. What's happening in these cases?
Well, two very similar stories with very different outcomes, I'd say. In fact, I've just written a piece which should be going up on the BBC website soon about the New Zealand situation. Now, hedgehogs don't just eat slugs and snails. They will eat birds' eggs. And if hedgehogs are introduced into areas where the birds have established colonies on the ground and there weren't hedgehogs before, they can be vulnerable. These bird colonies can be vulnerable to having their eggs predated by hedgehogs. Now, I have done an awful lot of work on the islands around Scotland on this, up in Orkney, the islands, the archipelago north of Scotland, and in the Outer Hebrides to the west of Scotland. In both instances, hedgehogs have been introduced by people trying to control slugs and snails in their greenhouse. And the hedgehogs had escaped and were now causing, or being perceived to cause, problems. In New Zealand, hedgehogs were exported in the 1850s and 1860s by the early settlers. They set up these things called the acclimatization societies. They wanted to make New Zealand, which, to all intents and purposes, was pretty darn wonderful. They wanted to make it a little bit more like home, so they imported all sorts of things which have caused absolute chaos, such as foxes and deer and rabbits and things. But they actively imported hedgehogs. They were exporting them from the UK to New Zealand just to make people feel happier. And for quite some time, they were considered the most benign of the these imports. Now, the situations are different. In the US, which is the Outer Hebrides off Scotland, when these hedgehogs are found, they can be transported back to the mainland. And we don't need to kill them. But in New Zealand, there is no way you can sort of ship them back to the UK. That's obviously not feasible. So unfortunately, I find myself supporting the lethal control of hedgehogs in New Zealand, because the hedgehogs are having an impact on some very, very rare species of insect and bird. So, and in fact, reptiles as well.
Well, I was going to say, taking them back to Britain, repatriating them, could be a really fun scene, really, when the ship arrives, I think.
Just imagine them streaming off onto the docks of Southampton. Yes, unfortunately, yes, the logistics, I think, could be a little extreme on that, as there are probably hundreds of thousands of hedgehogs in New Zealand. So interestingly, the hedgehogs on New Zealand have all sprung from limited genetic stock, and they've got slight sort of deformities in their teeth, because there was obviously a wonky hedgehog in the very early lot that went out there. So, but anyway, that an aside. So, yes, do we have similar problems? Hedgehogs are snaffling up things they probably shouldn't be. And what was happening off the islands of Scotland is they were killing them. Yet and a bunch of us jumped up and down saying, maybe you shouldn't do that. And with a little bit of science, I did a study which showed you can move these hedgehogs alive. And that was great. We actually ended up having conservationists, ecologists, animal welfare, animal rights people all talking together and working together, which is possibly a first. Anyway, it's good news.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock on Green 960 AM, San Francisco. We'll be right back with more Hedgehog Madness with Hugh Warwick. But first, I want to thank John Scott, Corey, Ron, and Chris at KKGN for getting our program on the air every week. This is our one-year anniversary, broadcasting to the San Francisco area and streaming live across the nation from green960.com. Most of all, thank you, the listener, for joining us every Sunday night at 10:30 for Radio EcoShock. I really enjoy making this broadcast for you. Let's get back to our guest from England.
Yes, and you've said hedgehogs are impacted by climate change. How is that?
I'm not sure they're impacted by climate change directly. Hedgehogs are suffering from many threats in the UK, and it may be that climate change is affecting their behavior in that they're hibernating. The hedgehogs do this wonderful thing. When the winter comes, in late autumn, hedgehogs are eating absolutely nonstop, trying to put on extra body weight. And then they do this amazing thing called hibernation. They hole themselves up in a little nest, and they shut down to the point it's almost impossible to tell whether it's still alive or not. They can go without oxygen for up to an hour and a half if you're so willing to test it, a hedgehog in an airtight box, and still come out unharmed. Absolutely staggering work inside these hedgehogs. So there's a possibility that they're going into hibernation later and for shorter periods of time. The real threats that hedgehogs face are to do with what we describe as habitat fragmentation, where the suburban habitat where hedgehogs have taken up residence is becoming more fragmented because people are putting decking and patios in their gardens. They're paving over the front gardens to park their cars. They're putting up fences rather than having hedges so the hedgehogs can't move between gardens, that sort of thing. And in the rural setting, hedgehogs are suffering from habitat fragmentation because, well, hedgehogs aren't called hedgehogs on a whim. They hog the hedges. You know, that's their form of moving throughout the rural environment, is through the hedges. They're the motorways of that sort of ecosystem. And our hedges have been left to rack and ruin for decades now. So they're suffering from that. And also their food is being wiped out by intensive agriculture. It's not a happy time to be a hedgehog.
Can you tell us why you just went and got your first tattoo?
Probably my last tattoo as well. My wife thinks it is the perfect expression of a midlife crisis, I pointed out that this is surely better for me, our bank balance, and the hedgehogs, than maybe buying a sports car. There's an art project which has been taking place in Manchester in England, called Extinct. It's Extinked, and it's a sort of social experiment marrying together artists, tattooists, and animal lovers. And what the artists have done is get 100 of the species from the UK's Biodiversity Action Plan. These are a list of species which are most people are most concerned about. And then they've drawn an image for each of these. And then they said, here we go. Who wants to become an ambassador for everything from, obviously, the hedgehog, through other sort of more obvious and charismatic species like the red squirrel and the dormouse, all the way down to some pretty obscure plants, or the shrill carder bee, or what I love, the boring millipede. I mean, what a name for an animal, the boring millipede. They were absolutely overwhelmed with subscribers. Many, many, many hundreds of people were disappointed. And in fact, just this last weekend, we all got together in a gallery in Manchester, and over 4 days, there was a mass tattooing event. And I was the very first tattoo to be done, number one out of all 100. And my hedgehog now sits, it's a very cute little hedgehog too, just sits on my left leg above the ankle. And I think my wife, well, she let me into the house, let's put it that way. So she's accepting it.
It sounds almost like another lifetime marriage in a way, but you've already been working on it for 20 years for these spiny creatures.
Yes, I mean, I've never actually thought about having a hedgehog, a tattoo before. Though I have to say, I do reckon that part of the reason the entire process was passed relatively easily for me was that I have been handling very prickly animals. I have picked up hedgehogs thousands of times, and I'm sure that has in some way sort of immunized myself to the pain of lots of needles jabbing into my skin.
Really, that would be nothing for you. Well, there have been a lot of jokes and folklore about these creatures. We've got Sonic the Hedgehog and Mrs. Tiggy Winkle, or Kipling's Stickly Prickly. What are a couple of myths or stories about these creatures?
Oh, my goodness me. Now, I wrote a book about this. There are so many stories about hedgehogs, and that's one of the things I love about it, because they do attract that sort of attention. In fact, I did my very first, and I've been really pushing the boundaries of my comfort zones of late, because a couple of weekends before I got the tattoo, I did my first ever bit of hedgehog stand-up. And that was terrifying. I don't think I'm ever going to do that again. But it gave me an opportunity to tell lots of really bad hedgehog jokes. My favorite of which actually was, there was a joke which won an award recently, which is, you know, hedgehogs, why can't they just share the hedge? There's a comedian called Dan Antopolsky who came up with that one. But I was particularly fond of one which I sort of abused a chicken joke to make, which is, why did the hedgehog cross the road? The old joke, why did the hedgehog cross the road? To see its flatmate, because hedgehogs always getting squashed on the roads. I said, why did the hedgehog cross the road, jump up and down in the muddy puddle, and then run back again? Because there's a dirty double-crossing hedgehog. And I just thought, that's good. I like that one. So there's all that sort of line of it. But the sort of mythology which follows hedgehogs, it used to be that they were an animal of portent, an animal of the dark, an animal which was a bit secretive and a little bit scary. Many of the stories were quite disturbing. Until 1905, when Beatrix Potter, fed up with being abused by her male chauvinist colleagues, went off to give up science and write amazing stories. And since 1905, nearly every single hedgehog story has had the hedgehog as the very benign, well, everything from benign through to complete superhero sort of character. Principal ones, hedgehogs are covered in fleas. That's one of the ones I get all the time. And actually, I have very rarely met a flea-ridden hedgehog. And there are many reasons why people think they're covered in fleas, but it's principally the hedgehog you're most likely to see is one out in daylight, and a hedgehog out in daylight is poorly, and a poorly hedgehog can't groom itself properly, so it's probably going to have more parasites. So that's, yes, there are many, many, many stories out there, and I will. I can't really take up more of your time. You've got other people in your program.
Yeah, we've got some more to go, so I really want to ask you, where can listeners find out more about hedgehogs, just as we wrap up here?
Okay, well, there's a number of different sites. My website is www.urchin.info, urchin, U-R-C-H-I-N. And from that, you can find links to the British Hedgehog Preservation Society, to the Hedgehog Welfare Society in the States, and begin to start getting an idea of where you can find more information. Also, a fairly eclectic and peculiar blog. I'm currently writing a piece all about my tattooing exploits, or rather, my being tattooed exploits. You'll get the lowdown on that as well, and also to consider whether my next book might result in another tattoo.
Ah, well, we'll look for that. So from England, we've been talking hedgehogs with Hugh Warwick, author of a book all about them. In Europe, look for A Prickly Affair, or in North America, The Hedgehog's Dilemma. Thank you so much, Hugh, for a look at this lovable creature.
Alex, a real pleasure. Thank you.
Broadcast on 16 stations in Canada and the United States. Going out over the world by satellite and cable, podcast and downloads, you've got Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Get tons of free MP3 downloads from our site at ecoshock.org. ECO, shock like an electric shock. It's radioactive.
This is for all the protesters who are standing up along the line. Standing up for what you believe, and it doesn't matter what the price. This is for all the peace lovers who are peacing out on this great land. Peacefully being passive while the aggressors are getting.